This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Okay, welcome to the Place to Be reaction show for Money in the Bank 2015. Tonight I got from the Titans, our buddy Pete, from Wrestling Culture, Dylan, from Exile on Bad Street, not Main Street, but Bad Street. Got Chris Zellner, and we got our good buddy Scott from the Place to Be Nation in the main event here. And fellas, the tonight show started with King Barrett versus R-Truth. Scott, why don't you kick us off and tell us what you thought about this pre-show match?
Well, the match itself was fine. It wasn't anything offensive. I am clearly bummed that a guy wins a big tournament, you know, one of the big network things, and then now he's, you know, jobbing out to a guy who I'm surprised still has won a job. The match was fine. Nothing really to go on from there. The announcers were just, you know, setting up the show itself and nothing earth-shattering.
Well, I think R-Truth still has job. One, you know, I don't know why they book him the way they do. But two, because he is a guy that interacts with the crowd and does his what's up thing. And you know, I think they like that, you know. But I agree. I mean, it's basically become the new Intercontinental title, you know, where, okay, now we're going to just drop this guy out because he has a title, you know, of King, where it used to be the Intercontinental holder was the guy who got to be jobbed out every week on TV. What do you think, Zellner?
I was totally was going to say that. You stole my talking point on that. But Barrett's new little attire he has going on there, the type of Spartacus type deal with the little undercarriage to his robe, that was kind of goofy, which goes along with the gimmick anyway. R-Truth is there. His purpose is to, you know, be an undercarder, to get over with, you know, his little chant, stuff like that. It probably works better on house shows than it does on television. But, yeah, and Vince loves that type of character anyway, that black guy that does that type of shtick, you know, the shucking and jiving and stuff like that, especially like after the match, the way he was acting. Yeah, it was just total comedy. That's all it was.
Anything to add, Dylan?
No, I mean, I think Chris is right that the real reason R-Truth has a job is, well, twofold. It is because of the house shows, because they do need guys like that that, you know, are over with the live crowds and things of that nature. But also, it is because R-Truth's character is basically what Vince McMahon thinks all black people are like in real life. So I think that's why he has a job.
Yeah.
You know, and here's the deal with this. It's like, I don't understand. Like, I have no problem with R-Truth being on the roster. You know, he works hard when he's out there and whatever. He serves a purpose to one degree or another. But it just seems really weird that you would take a guy in Wade Barrett who, when he went down with an injury around this time last year, was arguably the second or third most over guy on the entire roster. And not only did they, like, bring him back in a way that was sort of underwhelming, but they've done, like, they've done everything to make him come across as sort of almost the lowest tier guy that gets any regular television time. And I don't understand what the purpose of that is. Like, what function does that serve for anyone? Doesn't help him, doesn't help the shows, and it doesn't help R-Truth, by the way, to beat him, because first of all, they're not going to push Truth, and secondly, a win over Barrett doesn't even mean anything at this point because he's jobbed everyone else already. So the match was what it was, but it's just really weird that this situation is what it is. It doesn't make any sense. I don't see how it benefits anybody.
You know what he's becoming? Yeah. It just come to me. He's become like the new Drew McIntyre in a lot of ways.
That's a good comparison.
And you know, it makes me wonder, does it come down to his ethnicity and Kevin Dunn not really being a fan of the Europeans? You know, which is a known deal that he doesn't like the European accents and stuff like that. So
really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I think we spent way too much time on this show match.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's move on to something more important. Chris, you and I, along with David Bixenspan, just did a 3.5-hour Dusty tribute. Tonight, we get to see the Dusty tribute and the Tim Bell salute. Quick thoughts on the Dusty tribute tonight.
Yeah, that was tough. I felt real bad for Renee having to go back, you know, to do her little wraparound after that video, and she was you know, on camera just bawling. But it endeared her to me definitely because she showed raw emotion that you do not hardly ever see on WWE television like that. So, you know, it worked in a way, but she was put in a bad spot. Now, the whole video was awesome. They did a tremendous job on that. And the Tim Bell salute was great. The fans doing the clapping to Dusty's theme rhythmically, which got everybody else to start doing it on the stage, was pretty organic and great, too. So, yeah, they did a first-class job, I think, in giving Dusty a tribute.
Dylan.
I really liked it. Of course, I love Dusty Rhodes. He's as much a part of my childhood as probably any wrestler in history. Just earlier today, my dad was forcing my mother to watch Dusty Rhodes promos, and today's my mom's birthday. So that tells you how significant Dusty Rhodes was to the Hales family as a whole. You know, it was the tribute, the video package itself, I thought was good. I mean, if you're rating it as a video package, which seems kind of morbid, I didn't think it was, you know, the Eddie video package from years ago and the Randy Savage video package sort of tugged at my heartstrings a little bit more than this one did. But the 10 Bell salute was a really great moment. I really thought Vince marking out for the song and dancing kind of added something.
I agree with that.
Yeah. See, and just Vince being on camera, because we see him so rarely these days, I think got over sort of the gravity of the moment.
Yeah.
And you know, Renee, it's funny when Renee was breaking down like that. You know, I think even like my mom was kind of watching, was like teared up a little bit just because of that, you know, sort of sympathizing with her. And it reminded me of of when Gorilla Monsoon died and they did the thing on Nitro where Bobby Heenan gave Gorilla a little tribute and he got choked up. So it was a cool moment. I was really happy they did it. You know, of course you knew they were going to do something big for Dusty because he was still part of the company. He was such a huge star, but I think sort of set a weird mood at the beginning of the show, but it was the absolute right thing to do. So,
sure, Pete.
Yeah, I thought it was well done, and it was touching. And when Renee cried, I really added a lot of gravity to it. And like Chris said about the raw emotion, I mean, it made me really just want to give her a hug, and not just because she's hot, because I just felt so you know, for her, because you could just tell it just meant a lot to her. Dusty and what they did, I thought, you know, and they did a good job.
Scott,
it was fantastic, like they always do with tribute packages. My only gripe, and not really a gripe, it's just maybe it's just the older fan in me. If they're gonna pay for a real song, have they exhausted every Coldplay song that they could possibly think of to throw on these tributes? Man, where's Midnight Rider by the Allman Brothers? For Christ's sakes, I don't care if people if half of them weren't alive when it came out. I think that was Imagine Dragons,
which they used that song recently.
That's even worse.
Yeah, it all sounds like Coldplay to me. Man.
It all sounds like crap anyway. But I mean, come on, man. You know. And I got one more silver dollar.
At least it wasn't Leave the Memories Alone.
Yeah. When I think of Ric Flair, I think of Fuel.
Oh God!
But no, I mean, overall, the clips wise, I mean, it was pretty awesome. I had some guys over that were a mixture of fans who only knew him from the polka dot baby, and then those that watched him in Florida in 1982. So you know, it was awesome. It was an awesome tribute, and I'm looking forward to the show on Raw after Raw tomorrow night, and see what they're gonna do. But other than their hideous choice of music now, just so the 9-year-olds can figure out who the hell he is, the tribute was fine. I thought it was really good.
Good deal. Well, let's go to the show proper. And kind of it's been the tradition to start off a Money in the Bank pay-per-view with the Money in the Bank match. And in this one, we have Roman Reigns versus Sheamus versus Randy Orton versus Kane versus Dolph Ziggler versus Kofi Kingston versus Neville. And so, Dylan, thoughts on the Money in the Bank match?
You know, this was a pretty odd match. I mean, to be fair, I think these guys were put in a sort of a weird position having to come off that Dusty tribute, which was such a real moment that you don't really see anymore in pro wrestling. And, you know, to that, in that sense, I think it was kind of odd because you're going from that right into guys doing sort of like your standard contrived ladder match spots, which are pretty much the exact opposite of authenticity. So it was kind of a hard jump from one to the other. I didn't hate it, but my big takeaway, I think, from tonight is that I'm kind of, at this point, almost completely over the concept of these gimmick pay-per-views. Amen. I mean, we've said it time and time again, and it's not that the show was bad. Of course, we'll talk about that at the end, but it just, this match, it was like, it felt like a match that they were just obligated to do. Like, there was nothing in it that, you know, jumped off the page and made me say, oh, this is really, really good. I mean, absolutely nothing. There were individual moments that were fine or even interesting or whatever. You know, I thought Neville got a chance to kind of feel like a star for fleeting moments here or there, although I'm a little bit surprised they didn't let him do more in the match. To me, the guy who really came out of this looking as good as he has on every big match, I thought Reigns was the best guy in the match, clearly, as far as work goes. I didn't think anybody else was in his league. The crowd was really into it, which helped it, which kind of, you know, I mean, if this one was a match where the crowd was not hot, I don't know that I would have thought that much of it at all. I thought it was okay in large part because the crowd was really into it. And I thought some of the rain spots were pretty cool and well-timed and well-done. But the finish was bizarre. I mean, Sheamus winning, to me, and I'm a big Sheamus guy, but that completely came out of nowhere to me. And I honestly don't know where they're going to go with that.
I think that's a good thing, though. I think because we'll talk about that in a minute. Chris, what'd you think?
Yeah, if you told me guys that was going to win this match, I would have thought Reigns probably number one. I would probably put Neville two, just because of the like a shot factor there, and Sheamus maybe at best three. So yeah, Sheamus winning definitely caught me by surprise. This was like one of the tamest Money in the Bank matches that they've ever done as well. There wasn't a whole lot of the oh shit spots, you know, where guys are doing car crash and stuff like that. Which is good. It's just good. That's right. You know, they finally caught on to that. Reigns' dive to the floor, I thought was great, especially when they did the slow-mo where, you know, he just totally cleared the rope, like just barely but enough, and hit everybody coming down. I liked the whole deal with Big E and Xavier coming out trying to run interference for Kofi. I thought that was a cute touch because they wanted that briefcase so bad. But, it was just a ladder match, and, you know, ladder matches are so passe these days. I mean, we've seen this for 20 years now on WWE big shows and other major wrestling shows, and it's just a tired gimmick. It really is now.
Okay. Yeah. I want to get Pete and Scott's thoughts, and then I want to respond to everything y'all are saying because I have a totally different take from y'all so far. Pete.
In the Place B Nation of pick and pull, I actually picked Sheamus to win this. Because elimination, you have to. I mean, normally they get the Money in the Bank the little briefcase that's a heel. So I think you got to eliminate almost all the baby faces out of the equation because it's just not a baby face thing. And it's just but it is a tired WWF trope. Because I mean, they booked themselves in a corner last year, waiting and waiting and waiting. I mean, ultimately it worked fine with Rollins cashing in at Mania and made a big moment. But I mean, I don't think that was the original plan on what they were going to do with the briefcase, and it just seemed and it dragged and dragged. But for the match, I enjoyed it. I thought everyone got a chance to shine. Like everyone was saying, Reigns was head and shoulders above everyone. And it accomplished what it needed to do. I mean, I thought it was a good match, like in the 3.25 range. And I thought it was a solid way to start the show. But But multi-man ladder matches are kind of just like, yeah, it's just I could live without seeing them for a while.
Scott?
I'll talk about Sheamus in a second. I thought that the flow of the match was good. I'm glad Neville replaced Kofi as the, you know, guy that takes the cool bumps. I'll tell you this, guys. I honestly thought that Kofi was strictly in the match as a red herring because he's fighting Brock in that 4th of July Japan house show, which would have been kind of cool if Kofi won the briefcase and then kind of, you know, danced around with it for a couple of weeks and then Brock beats the shit out of him in Tokyo and just takes the thing and walks out, which would have been kind of neat.
But are they going to show the Tokyo match on the network?
Yes.
The whole show's on 4th of July.
Yeah. If you want to watch it live, though, you got to get up at like 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah, the reaction show will be at like noon. So
it'd be a lot better than these midnight marathons.
I know. But anyway, I thought the match was really good. I have no problem with Sheamus. There's nothing wrong with Sheamus. The guy's a capable champion, past champion. He's a good character. He's fresh. He's been gone long enough that I'm not bored. I hated him as a babyface. I love him as a heel. Always have. He's kind of a smaller Brock in that, you know, when he's a heel. I mean, you watch his 2010 stuff. I like it. And, you know, he clubs people. He's got a good power offense as a heel. So I got no problem with him winning. What they do with it? Well, they don't have to worry about what to do with it right now. They got time to think about it. But
personally, I think they gave it to him. Honestly, I think they're going to make him the first heel that fails, tell you the truth.
He wouldn't be the first heel to fail.
Sandow failed.
No, Sandow failed.
Oh, Sandow. That's right. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, he could. Sure, he could. But that's fine. That's irrelevant.
It looks like they're going to link him with Ambrose as far as his rumors for the next show. So we'll see how that goes.
That'll be cool. No problem with that.
I'll tell you what.
But anyway, I think. Just one more quick point. I think. Regardless what he does, what they do with it in the future, I had no problem with him winning it. The only guy that probably would have pissed me off if he won was Kane. I wouldn't even have cared if Orton won again. Whatever. Kane would have been the only one that would have aggravated me, unless they would have done some like weird thing where he dangles it in front of Rollins in authority meetings or whatever. But that still would have probably pissed people off. But I had no problem with Sheamus winning. And the match I thought was entertaining enough.
I would be the first person pissed off at that because I hate Kane. This should be the Kane summer retirement tour. That's what they need to do here. But no, I actually really like this match because if you noticed, besides climbing the ladder, there really weren't there was the setup ladder in the corner where Sheamus gave the two little guys the double power bombs, right? And then there was Kane.
Reigns did.
Is Reigns the one who powerbombed Neville and
yes.
All right, cool. Whatever. Whoever.
let me say something real quick. You just reminded me of something, Will, before you continue. There was a moment in this match. Maybe I was the only one who caught it. I said something to the guys I was with. He did that thing with Neville, and then he kind of cackled in like a heelish manner, like, I just threw the dork out.
The crowd was booing him.
Yeah, so I think I was thinking to myself, is something going on here? So anyway, I just want to make that point. Go ahead,
Will. Booked, that's for sure.
So then he does that. And then there was the moment, I want to give Kane props here, where he does the boot, you know, that makes the, who was it? Kofi and Neville again? Or where he gives the boot to the ladder?
I thought Dolph?
It was Dolph and Neville.
Yes.
Dolph and Neville, the ladder. And then he does the baseball slide, ladder spot.
Yeah.
You know? And those were really the only big ladder spots in the match, right? Besides like pushing the ladder down and, you know, kind of running up and down the ladder. That was it. And so to me, that was actually a refreshing change of pace. So I don't know. I was really happy that was it. And I agree on Reigns. Reigns looked magnificent this match, but I thought all of the guys came to play tonight. So I was really happy with the match itself overall. The Bray Wyatt thing, I am not looking forward to Bray Wyatt Roman.
Nobody's looking forward to
5 weeks of promo.
Because here's the problem, okay? And I do want to make this point clear if I wasn't clear earlier. I love Sheamus. I have no problem with him winning per se. It's just I thought it was an odd thing that he won. But Bray Wyatt is another feud where I don't think either guy can afford to lose. I mean, they keep doing this. They set up these feuds where you've got guys who, you know, they've built in certain ways where a loss will hurt them inordinately, an inordinate amount. And, you know, I mean, I assume Bray is losing this feud.
Well, Dylan, they just wrestled on Raw 2 weeks ago, and Reigns beat him clean with a spear.
I know.
You know what? If that's the case, then why not have Bray come out? That is a perfectly logical reason for Bray to cost Reigns the match.
Yeah, good point. I agree.
You can absolutely come up with reasons for Bray to come out. That in and of itself I didn't really have a problem with. It's just more of this is yet another feud.
where they trade wins or one of them gets buried. Yeah.
And neither guy, you know, and the reality is I don't think Reigns actually gets a whole lot if he wins the feud, because Bray's not really been put in a position where a win over him matters as much as it should. And there's no way Bray should win the feud. So
have they ever included him in the title picture?
Bray?
Yeah.
Yeah, they've been in like multi matches and stuff.
No. I'm saying, like, has he had a title program in a year and a half, 2 years?
No.
He hasn't.
No, because Bryan was a champion when he feuded with him. Cena was a champion when he feuded with him. So, no.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, I mean, overall, Dusty tribute, this match so far, so good. Let's go to the women's match. I know this is a Pete's favorite type of match, so we're going to start with Pete. Nikki Bella versus Paige.
Hey, I liked it.
I did too, Pete. And that's, I wanted to argue with you, but if you liked it, we're on.
Yeah, I was surprised that the crowd was really with him early. They lost him a little at the end because the match was booked a little long for the girls. But I liked Nikki working over the back, and we love the Tully Blanchard slingshot suplex. And then you see Nikki working a body scissor, so she's still going after that back. And then a nice touch was I love Nikki kissing Paige on the forehead. That was just a nice heelish touch. Then you see, you know, Paige making comebacks, hitting the ribs and stuff. That was good. I enjoyed the Twin Magic failing. It made no sense, but I mean the payoff with the tissue paper coming off out of Bree's bra was nice. I give it like 2.5 stars. I thought they worked hard and had a pretty solid match, and I thought Nikki looked particularly good in the match.
Scott?
Yeah, I've you know, and this is a guy for many years, 2009 through or whenever they first debuted till like last year, that I absolutely despise the Bellas. But I'm going to give Nikki credit. She has done her best to try and really, you know, work her butt off to try and do more than, you know, 4 minute TV kind of walk through the you know, walk through a match kind of thing. And Paige seems to be very easy to work with. So I thought the match was very entertaining. I thought the crowd was somewhat into it. I'd like to think that was the way the match was booked the whole time. We didn't just invent a Dusty finish out of tribute sake just for, you know, shits and giggles, which technically wasn't a Dusty finish because that takes a week for it to change. But
last pay per view.
Well, that's true too. That's true. But a true Dusty finish, the match ends and then we get the swerve, not like a half swerve. That's like a half Dusty. That's like a gold dust finish. Otherwise I thought it was fine. I'm surprised. I mean, they used to use that when they were, you know, mid card fodder in the, you know, 2008, 2009, they haven't really done the swerve in a while, but I did like the, let's be honest, great continuity and character development, because clearly, unless you're blind, you can tell Brie and Nikki apart. We're not going to delve why, because if not, then you're not paying attention. But the fact that the pin happened and then she starts throwing, you know, ripping out 50 boxes of Kleenex, I thought was hilarious and great heel work.
I liked it.
I think it's great. I mean, it wasn't just like, oh, wow, it's Brie, but she's flat chested.
I think exposing her tattoo was a little too much, but yeah, I agree with you.
That was like, hello,
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I thought the whole unstuffing the Brock, A, making fun of her sister, and B, you know, that kind of a rib, but B, really good heel work, like, haha, I fooled you, my boobs aren't.
And she had color extensions too to match, which, you know, was a nice touch.
Yeah, it was a nice touch. So overall, I mean, you know, one of the better Divas title matches. Nothing, you know, it was good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, not being Slitch, but thumbs up for me. What about you, Dylan?
Oh, hold on. One other thing. I also liked how they finished with the rack attack as after the payoff of the back work.
I agree with that.
Right. Yeah.
Dylan?
I thought it was good. I mean, it wasn't, I don't think it was as good as their match. They had a match from main event earlier this year that I actually thought was a little bit better. It was kind of built around arm work, and I'm a mark for stuff like that. But I really liked this match. You know, the biggest problem that the Divas seem to have, and this is even the case to an extent with the NXT women, even though I think they're clearly better and in some cases really, really, really good, like Sasha Banks. But the biggest problem they seem to have as a whole, in my view, is they sometimes struggle to fill time. Like, you know, you'll have a spot and then it's like, all right, how do you connect the dots. And there were a couple of moments in this that I sort of felt that way about, but generally speaking, I thought they did a better job connecting the dots than they normally do. You know, I really liked how Paige kept going for submissions and Nikki was just sort of desperate to get out of them. Like, she knew if she got caught in one, she was going to be screwed, which is not something that you would normally see. Nikki, you know, her heel work is sort of straight out of like the 80s territorial standard heels. Like, you pick a body part, you work it over, you kind of do it in a fashion that a lot of modern fans would characterize as rest holdy because they don't get what's going on. But I thought it was all well done. Nothing phenomenal, but certainly well done. The finish I actually liked a lot. I saw a lot of people were complaining about it on Twitter because it was illogical that it wasn't a DQ. Well, okay, whatever. I still thought, you know, if you're going to play with that concept and do it in a cutish way like that, at least do it in a way that makes sense. And that was a way that I thought clearly made sense. Cool. So, yeah, I mean, the only thing that bothered me slightly is in my fantasy booking mind, I was really hoping that Paige was going to run out and cost John Cena the match later on in the night. you know, and maybe they do a backstage angle where she's...
Well, that would have been real heel work right there.
Permanently retires him. But you know, as a whole, good performance by the Divas. Probably the best performance they've had on pay-per-view in a long time.
Yeah, the last match I can remember enjoying this much from the Divas was Natalya versus AJ from that TLC a couple of years back. Zellner.
Listen to all this Nikki Bella love going on here, and not coming from me. how about that, huh? Vindication.
But you haven't lived down the other one. Who was the other one that she had the match with last month?
Naomi. Yeah.
You haven't lived that one down yet.
Well, whatever. But it's funny that, you know, John Cena is sitting back watching ROH and PWG stuff, and Nikki Bella sitting back watching 1986 Jim Crockett Promotions to get her moveset going. So props to her. And the Twin Magic deal, I think that was clearly to make up for the one they did last week where Brie come out there and didn't have all that extra stuff in there, and people were like, oh, how can that referee be so stupid and not show the difference? At least they tried this time. And Nikki using the tissue to wipe away the tears after the finish was pretty fun too. So yeah, really good stuff.
I tell you what, man, I'm gonna challenge you on that 86 Crockett, and I'm gonna say that this was 85 world class with the dynamic duo under the hood switching each other out.
Well, Kevin Von Erich body scissors.
And the Kevin Von Erich body scissors. Man, why are you stealing my thunder, motherfucker? You're the one who said 86 Crockett. We're going to get to 86 Crockett in a little bit.
Hey, Will, you keep talking like that, you're going to owe somebody a WWE Network subscription.
Hey, motherfucker. That is only on the Dangerous Alliance podcast that you can check out here on Place to Be. That is not on the reaction show. There's no way that I can do this month in and month out with Johnny Sorrow and not drop a few F-bombs. We all know that to be true. Anyway, all right. So anyway, let's go to our next match. Two big guys, Ryback versus the Big Show. Scott, I wasn't paying attention to it. I'll admit I was watching Game of Thrones during this match. Sorry. What'd you think?
I'll tell you something. As much as Big Show is probably as tired as Kane is, this might be a pretty good feud for Ryback, though. I think a title... You know, a lot of people, you can say, why does this guy deserve a title, or why does anybody deserve a title being... But I'll tell you something. Here's a guy who kind of, you know, has meandered in and out for the last, you know, probably 18 months. And he seems very fresh now with a belt. I'm not going to give this match, you know, a million stars. All I'm saying is I think Big Show will be more helpful to Ryback than he's been to anybody else in recent months. Because Ryback's the kind of guy that would look good, and you know, shell shock on Big Show is not easy. As he's a big dude, he's still 500 pounds. So I think it was a good exercise for Ryback. The match was all right, but I think it was a good exercise for Ryback, and I think you'll see. I'd like to think that he could ride this kind of wave of consistency and be a decent Intercontinental Champion. But the match was okay. Wasn't any great.
Dylan, what'd you think of the match? And what about Miz's interference there? I thought it ruined the flow, man.
The match itself, I actually thought was pretty good. You know, I mean, I said this on the last show, I think, and if you follow me on Twitter at Dylan Waco, cheap plug, you've probably seen me talk about this some over the course. I think Ryback's one of the most underrated workers on the planet this year. I think he's pretty consistently had good matches. He's not, you know, anybody that necessarily is going to blow you away with a match of the year level performance, but he's really worked hard and he's improved a ton. I thought they, you know, did a smart thing the way this was laid out. It was basically worked as a Haas sprint where they didn't try and build heat or do any of this traditional sort of stuff that, you know, you would, that usually I would want in a match, but is probably not going to get over with these two guys, if we're being frank, especially in front of a crowd that, let's be honest, was probably geared toward your Kevin Owens and Adrian Neville's of the world and not your Rybacks of the world. So I thought the match they worked was really smart for that crowd. You know, they teased a finish right away and then they sort of went from there, and you had a lot of back and forth spots where it looked like somebody was going to get hit with a final bomb and end up losing, you know, and then you had a terrible finish, you know, and it's like, the inclusion of Miz in the feud in and of itself, I think, is odd. And, you know, it's like, I actually agree with Scott's point that the Big Show is probably as good a feud as anybody for Ryback right now. But the inclusion of Miz, I think, is a real problem, because my fear is that at the end of the day, Big Show is going to be protected and Miz is going to be the person who takes the fall in all this. And that doesn't help Ryback at all. So, you know,
and Miz isn't a guy who really builds people. You know, no. Like, he, like getting a pin on Miz or winning a feud over Miz means nothing.
Or worst case scenario, Miz somehow steals a pinfall and gets the damn belt out of it.
Which could happen. I could easily see that happening. In fact, I think the least likely scenario is Ryback definitively beating Show. I think that's actually the least likely scenario. Agree,
yeah.
So.
All right. Oh, I'm sorry. Were you finished, Dylan?
Who cares? Move on.
Zellner.
Yeah, as good as a Big Show feud could be for Ryback, the Miz could be the worst thing for Ryback. And I could totally see, like, Ryback or Show putting one of the other one out and Miz stealing the pin and winning the title, which would be just fucking ridiculous. But regarding the match itself, I thought it was really good stuff. I mean, these dudes are out there just throwing bombs. Ryback breaking out the Juju Katami, I thought, was a cool little touch. And Dylan brought up about the crowd, though. And this is like, you know, we had these two big guys that were, you know, working hard, doing some good stuff. And then when Miz interferes in the finish, there was a chant that was pretty audible that said was chanting, "Thank you, Miz," for thanking him for you know, stopping that match. I'm like, fuck off, losers. So, yeah.
All right, Zelda. Full of hate.
Not enough flips.
Yeah.
Too much selling.
Pete.
Yeah, I thought Show was pretty awesome in the match. Where he was bumping pretty good for Ryback's power stuff. But that finish just sucked the energy out of the whole entire match and just left it on a total flat note, knowing Miz is now involved in this Haas feud. So big fuck off to them, too.
All right. A lot of anger going on tonight. I'm praising Kane. Pete's praising women's matches. But then all this hostility out of nowhere. So, guys, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the last three matches, and we're going to give a shout-out to the Place to Be Nation right now, and we'll be back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself and Scott Criscolo on The Mothership, The Place to Be Podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you there, including Main Event, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on the positives of the business. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past through Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave's Wrestling Culture podcast, our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance podcast starring myself and Pro Wrestling Only's Will, diving into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Griscolo and Dr. G, The Kings of Sport, featuring Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Lounge, hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops. PTBN also proudly features Richard and the Mailman Podcast, which specializes in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows are available on PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also home to the tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
The Place to Be Nation and Pro Wrestling Only are proud to present the PWO PTBN Podcast Network. Join us for a variety of great shows that explore all the facets of professional wrestling.
Join good old Will from Texas for our Place to Be Nation reaction shows, and Goodwill Wrestling, which has been kicking since before JR had barbecue sauce.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play and join Chad and Parv as they discuss classic NWA and WCW pay-per-view.
And take in one of our newest podcasts, Exile on Bed Street, and allow Chris Zellner to give you a history lesson about important moments in wrestling's colorful past.
Listen to Johnny, Pete, Parv, and Kelly, the titans of wrestling, as they examine in depth the history of the WWF in the 1970s and 1980s.
And then there's Brainbuster, the wrestling game show, Tag Teams Back Again, the Pro Wrestling Super Show, the All Japan Excite Series, and the Super Extreme Vault for some ECW.
You can hear all of these great podcasts and more on one feed. Remember, PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network, part of the Place to Be Nation family.
Okay, welcome back to Place to Be Nation. This is the reaction show for Money in the Bank 2015. And now we're going to go into one of the big main events of tonight's show, John Cena versus Kevin Owens in a rematch from the last show from Elimination Chamber. And so, Dylan, thoughts on the match and the booking of the match, which I'm sure you have plenty to say about.
Well, I'm actually going to lead with one aspect of the booking of the match, which is card placement, and just say that I think it was insane for this match not to go on last. I'll cover that more when we get to the main event, but I think it should have gone on last. I think it's obvious it should have gone on last, and I think it was a mistake to put it where they put it on the show. Beyond that, the match itself, look, I mean, the big takeaway from this one is John Cena. Like, we always hear from certain people, I'm not going to name who, from certain areas and corners of the internet, no, wrestling fandom in the wrestling world, you hear people who will criticize John Cena for being too formulaic. They'll criticize John Cena for not being as adaptable as other people. And by the same token, you'll hear about how, I mean, I've heard people say this, and I always sort of roll my eyes when I hear them say this, but you'll hear people talk about how all these guys on the indie scene, they have to work all these different styles because they're all over the place. They're so super adaptable. And then you watch a PWG match and it's the exact same thing. It's go, 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 go. No selling, 48 finishers in the first 3 minutes of the match, collecting near falls for the sake of collecting near falls, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which I'll be the first person to admit I can be super entertained by in the right context. The big takeaway from this match is John Cena could walk into PWG tomorrow and be the best worker in that promotion. adapts so well to that style of wrestling. This whole story of John Cena being a guy who's just a WWE creation, and you could plug other people into that role because WWE main event style is a thing you could sort of just throw people in and you'll come out well at the end because of the agents and all that. That's complete garbage and horse shit. John Cena is one of the greatest wrestlers of all time precisely because of matches like this. He let Kevin Owens have his kind of match, and just like he did last month, although even more excessive within that style, I would argue, this month. And he went completely insane within that style. to the extent that this match was different from last month's match, it was different because of what John Cena did, not Kevin Owens. In fact, Kevin Owens basically did the exact same spots.
He just identical. Did even the build was almost identical.
Yeah, I mean, breaking the neck
and the headlocks, little headlock spots early.
Come on, Pete, let Dylan finish, man.
But Pete's right. I mean, he did the exact same match. It was like, well, Kevin Owens has a house show PWG match that he does, and John Cena came in and was like, no, we're not doing this house show shit, buddy. This is the big league. This is how you really work. And he changed it up. You know, he was bringing all kinds of crazy offense for Cena. The code red I've completely marked out for, not only because I'm a huge Amazing Red fan, but also because it was a completely off-the-wall move. It's giving me flashbacks to Rob Naylor and Wes Hatch talking with Chris over there on Exile on Bad Street about the indie superstars. You got John Cena doing indie superstar spots. The big miss leg drop off the top I thought was a tremendous spot because you never see Cena miss it, and the impact of it looked incredible, looked absolutely brutal. You know, tons of different offensive spots. Even the face plant electric chair spot that Cena did, which wasn't the craziest spot, but was something you totally see in an independent wrestling match or a stereotypical indie classic or whatever. I mean, John Cena was completely on point. I don't want to sell Owen short. He comes across like a star. He works like a star. He carries himself like a star, which is absolutely huge because a lot of these guys who I think are really good wrestlers that come out of the indies don't really grasp that aspect, and Owens 100% does, which is why he's in the position he is, which is why he's going to be one of the best wrestlers in the world someday if he's not already. But this is a match that made John Cena, you know, within the context of looking at it from an observer perspective, like when this match was over, I thought – this guy, John Cena, has played himself, even though he's in the mid-card in theory, he has played himself into Wrestler of the Year contention through this feud. You could arguably say the same thing about Owens, but to me, what Cena has done is even more impressive than what Owens has done because Owens is working his style of matches and Cena's not. Cena is completely outside of his comfort zone with this stuff, although it's something that he's shown he can do in the past as well. The booking with the finish, people will complain about it. On paper, I don't like the idea of Owens losing. In practice, I thought it was such a well-worked match, and it was so perfect for this crowd, and it was such a great display of what both guys could do within that style that I think it worked, and it didn't hurt Owens really much at all. And the post-match beatdown, I think, got back all the heat that you even theoretically could argue he would have lost. But having said that, I am still very nervous because we know how these things can go with the WWE. And at the end of the day, I feel like Owens has to win the feud. He doesn't necessarily have to win every match, but he has to win the feud. Or at the very least, he has to come out of the feud looking like a guy who you can buy as the top or one of the top two or three guys in the company rather than just a guy who was another guy that was fed to John Cena, like was the case with Rusev and like was the case with Bray Wyatt. So,
yeah,
very good match. I don't think quite match of the year level, but tremendous for the style it would work. And again, another example of why John Cena is one of the greatest wrestlers who ever lived.
All righty then. Zellner.
Yeah, I totally echo what Dylan said there, man.
No way.
I mean, Kevin Owens has brought something out of Cena, man, that, you know, few have ever done. And that's why I got to talk about Cena. Cena is a guy, one of the most giving superstars of all time. You will never see somebody like Hulk Hogan or Triple H or guys like that do stuff like John Cena does in these types of matches. John Cena breaking out a fucking code red? I mean, really, John Cena doing a code red. I mean, this match would have fit in perfectly on PWG or Ring of Honor, no doubt. And it's a testament to John Cena. Because he knows what he needs to do in these type of matches to get him over. Because if he took Owens and made him work the Cena style of match, the normal WWE style, the match would not work. It'd just be a total clusterfuck. And then, you know, the stuff after the match, you know, which enhances the finish. Now, before the aftermatch, I still thought the finish was okay because the way everything was booked going ahead of time, that Cena should have won the match. But that post-match was totally fantastic. You know, he did the whole thing with the Sami Zayn apron powerbomb spot, and Cena had to be helped to the back by numerous people, so he didn't, you know, get up and walk on his own, and he was selling it. And Steen was awesome in character development, especially, shouting out on the, going towards the back and laughing and all this other shit, as well as the whole thing with faking the handshake. I mean, everything just worked here. It was an awesome segment. And I'm kind of expecting maybe a Iron Man match type deal maybe for the third match or something. Two out of three falls, which they've done recently, but something special that, you know, to blow off this feud.
Yeah, what you guys have said, I'd have nothing new to add, but I thought earlier in the match, I thought they might have been started the tease of a John Cena heel turn with him complaining to the near falls with the ref. And then the finish happened, then I'm kind of backing off on it. I really honestly thought they were setting up a possible Cena heel turn and making Lesnar his opponent at WrestleMania, trying to fill up Dallas Cowboys Stadium.
Pete, I'm going to interrupt you briefly, as you did with me, to make the point that the new Cena heel turn, as I've argued before, is the tease of the Cena heel turn. That's how they do it. But go ahead.
Okay.
And we've seen this with Cena before, too. Whenever he's worked these type of matches... Yep. That he gets frustrated. He did that with Punk. He's done that
with Brian.
So yeah, he's done this before.
Right, but I think now they need to fill up 100,000 seats at Cowboys Stadium, and I think this might be the time they're this is really the first time they've actually actively moved Cena. And I don't want to say they moved him to the mid-card because that's totally hyperbole. But they've moved him down in the card where he's not headlining the shows as much. I honestly think this is the beginning. I think this might be stage one. Even this finish could even play into him while turning heel by being so gullible, and the fans still booed him after he got put on this great match that he should be being cheered for. I honestly think this is part one of a heel turn.
Scott?
I think the two best John Cena matches I've ever seen in my life was his match with Umaga. Both happened in the same year, actually. His match with Umaga at the 2007 Rumble, and him and Shawn in London. Not WrestleMania 23. I'm actually not a big fan of that match. I like the match in London better. And we've talked about Cena and his style. And Kevin Owens is a very unique... I always thought the most unique guy that he ever that Cena ever wrestled was Edge, because I always thought Edge was a very kind of a hybrid kind of guy who wrestled various ways when he got older and less kind of high flyish. But I've got to give the guy a lot of credit, and I said it after the Chamber. He'll adapt to anything. If he finds a guy that he's never wrestled before, and his style's just a little off from what he's used to, he'll be like, all right, I can do this. I don't care how old I am. I don't care that my body seems like a broken down pile of goo at this point. I'm gonna go for it. And so I applaud him going for. I'm guessing you guys, and please apologize for my ignorance. The Code Red you're talking about, is that like that move that kind of looked like the Canadian Destroyer?
Yes.
Is that the match? Yeah. Is that the movie you're talking about? Okay.
Yeah.
Which is pretty damn awesome. I'll say that.
Yep.
Because guys in their late 30s, early 40s or whatever would never try anything like that normally. So, and not a guy like Owens who's, you know, 290 pounds. We're not exactly talking about Punk here. We're talking about a pretty big
the only
dude.
Guys that do that are John Cena and La Parca.
But I mean, I want to talk about, besides the match itself, which was all kinds of awesome, and I think maybe one of his maybe three or four best matches ever. I think, and I saw this on Facebook, and I'm getting so aggravated with this now. You know, somebody posted on my pages anyway. Oh, that God, this show sucked. What'd you think of the oh, everything was good, but Cena won. I am getting so frigging, and I'm saying frigging, Will, and you know me, I've got the pottiest mouth in Place to Be Nation.
you're disgusting, Scott.
I know, I'm sorry. I'm so gosh darn it, I'm cutting a Cena promo from 9 years ago now. I am so tired of it now. It is absolutely childish to think, and I know we were talking about Cena winning and losing. I just find it, if you have a good reason, and I think it was you, Dylan, that said it, your reasoning is very good, but just to say, the show sucked because Cena won. Guys, you know, for those that think that way, this isn't 2009 or 2010. Grow up, all right? The guy can't just show up and lose to everybody, all right? He's the moneymaker of the company. Let's think in simple economics here.
It's a tired trope of the internet.
And, exactly. It's, you know, so aggravating.
It's embarrassing.
It is.
And Roman Reigns is suffering through it now as well, the early stages of it.
He's the money maker of the company. It's like, oh, cool, NXT guy in. Cena better lay down for him. You know, I mean, get a grip. It's ridiculous. I know some people will probably be like, well, Owen's first loss should have been to an NXT guy. It's John Cena, for Christ. It's like he lost R-Truth. I mean, come on. We all knew he was
Barrett.
I know, yeah. Wade Barrett, clearly not on the level of Kevin Owens. But now, he's going to lose his... And I mean, between now and if there is a rubber match, I'm sure they're planning, I think, on a takeover special in July at some point.
Well, they're doing a Tokyo, him and Balor for the title.
Now, yes, they are. I don't know if he's going to lose to Balor in that match, though.
I do.
He might.
I really do.
I think he's awesome.
I do. I think he's losing it.
I think it's awesome if he does. And it's not because I love Owens. I got one shirt of his. I'm probably going to buy that cool G.I. Joe-ish one. I think that's really cool. No, I love Owens. I just don't know if he'll win that match. But if he does, fantastic. My point is, it's John Cena. Yeah, we all hate him. Har, har, har. Most people do, I suppose. But the guy is the moneymaker. And losing to him is not, oh, man, this guy's Barry. It's not like Bray Wyatt. I mean, well, we dealt with that last year. And we've seen Bray just loses to everybody at this point. But I had zero issues with him losing tonight. Did I think he was going to lose? Actually, no. I thought Owens was going to win again. But I'm not mad that he lost. And I had an awesome theory. If you were talking about the Cena heel turn, whether it happens or if it ever happens, it cool. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But I think they really need to have the baby faces finally start saying to him, John, you really are a sucker, aren't you? I mean, come on. You really thought Kevin Owens was just going to shake your hand and walk out of there? Like, baby faces, like on Raw tomorrow night. You know, look at him and go, what are you doing?
Here's the thing, Scott. The promo a few weeks ago, they had that exchange in the ring, which everybody loved. And yeah, I thought Cena's delivery was absolutely brilliant. And I thought Owens' end was very good. But my takeaway from that, and I watched that with other people, a few of whom aren't even big wrestling fans, and the consensus takeaway was Cena is an entitled piece of shit who just called a guy who beat his ass and said he wasn't a man because he's a crybaby who's upset that he lost.
Right, right.
And at the end of the day, a part of me thinks that they are consciously presenting Cena that way because Cena is a stand-in for Vince McMahon and Kevin Dunn and that sort of vision of what a WWE superstar is. And and Kevin Owens is a stand-in for the sort of hardcore fan, what we theoretically hope Triple H's vision of a wrestling is going to be like in the future. Right. And so Cena is sort of a heel now, but not quite. Yeah. And right. it's a really weird dynamic, this feud, because yes, Owens is doing the more overtly heel stuff, but in a way, Owens is sympathetic because this is a guy who calls himself a prize fighter. He fights for his family. He's all over the internet, you know, writing these great tributes to Dusty, and you know, we know about his kid through Instagram and all of a sudden. It's this weird sort of clash between the old world and the new world, where one guy is sort of the stand-in for the old model and the other guy is the stand-in for the new model. And I think it's a very, very interesting dynamic because a part of me thinks this is what heels and faces are going to look like in the future. We're not there yet, but I think this might end up being what the sort of method of the transition in terms of how we look at these guys is the guys who are part of the social media landscape who are quote our guys to be followed from day one, like a Kevin Owens, for example, or Sami Zayn or whoever, are going to be branded one way versus the older guard, which is going to be branded another way, whether it be conscious or unconscious that they're doing this. I'm not even 100% sure yet, but that's how I read this stuff.
Right.
The thing about Cena though is if he does turn heel, quote unquote, he's going to get cheered. It's going to be like Hogan when he turned NWO, you know. Fans were booing Hogan out of the building, you know, for 95 and early 96. He turns NWO, and then everybody loves him again because he's down.
Yeah, that's why you're not going to see, like, an actual full-blown Cena heel turn, because then what they don't want happening will, which is chicks and kids will just stop watching, and guys will be like, yeah, and we still won't buy his crappy t-shirts.
It'll be Randy Orton syndrome, which is whenever Orton is a heel, he gets face reactions, and whenever he's a face, he gets no reaction.
Exactly.
Well, to be fair, this last face turn, he is getting loud, audible cheers.
He is getting good chance.
The last few shows, he's absolutely one of the most over guys right now.
Right.
But let's move on. Let me just, I got one more point, and then we're done.
I had no problem with Owens losing. He's losing to a bona fide Hall of Famer. He'll go back on to, I mean, the best thing to do would be him going on Wednesday night on NXT and actually kind of being heelish and going, well, you know what? I did lose to John Cena and Finn Balor. You're not John Cena. So he can use this loss and elevate that feud. If NXT's smart, and we know
that's good.
Well, they've already taken ahead of time, so they can't do that.
Well, yeah, that's true too.
All right, well, let's move
damn
on.
Damn it! But anyway,
let's move on to a legit title change: New Day versus Primetime Players. Zellner, talk about this one.
I love me some Primetime Players, and I love New Day, but I think this finish should not have happened just yet. I think there was much more shelf life on New Day as tag champions. So I think the title change happened too quick. But, the match I thought was fine. Darren Young was really good as face in peril. Hot Tag Titus is what I call him now. He's great on the hot tags. He's one of the best hot tag workers in the business. And the fans were into him, of course. They love doing his chant. But Xavier Woods, man, he's – as far as working, he's – you know, hit and miss, but that dude is really grown as a personality. And Big E is awesome right now. Big E as a heel, as that swarmy type heel, man, fantastic work. He's a guy that they need to break away. If they're going to do New Day tag team, it needs to be Kofi and Xavier, and Big E needs to go solo and try to, you know, go against Ryback or something for the IC title, or eventually make his way up to bigger things, because that dude's awesome and he needs to be spotlighted more. So, yeah, I'm happy for the PTP. Just thought it was a little too quick.
Pete?
Yeah, I liked the match. I just felt they needed a little bit more time to flesh things out. Like the face in peril, I thought that was fine. But the opening shine was a little too quick, because then they cut him off real quickly and they went to the heat on him. But, man, a lot of the interactions was good. Like, first off, the New Day's opening promo was fantastic, and Xavier and Big E were both fantastic in that role. When Big E is slapping Darren Young when he's in face in peril to the New Day theme music to it.
Clap therapy.
Yeah, I thought that was freaking fantastic. The hot tag by Titus was awesome. I thought the finishes came pretty quick. And Xavier laid down almost like a jobber instead of a guy who just had the tag titles.
Let me interrupt you now, Pete, because Xavier is a jobber, you know, and I'm he really isn't the tag champ. I think that's how New Day is going to get the belts back, is when they put Big E and Kofi back in and say, look, Xavier, you stay on the outside and cheerlead this while we get our belts back. And then they'll win by cheating. But Xavier is a jobber. He should have jobbed.
Okay, yeah. I'm not saying he shouldn't have jobbed, Will. I think you're misunderstanding. And the way he laid down flat, like he had no fight in him on the pin.
No, he's a jobber. No, he's a jobber.
Yeah, he loses, but there's ways to lose. There's no way just to chop his legs out from under him with all the personalities showing. I understand his role right now, but I feel his role should be a little bit better.
Okay.
You understand?
I think that it's a classic role. He's the guy who talks shit, but like he's a guy who, like Buddy Roberts in the Freebirds, got no off. Buddy Roberts was there to lose. You know what
right,
I mean?
And I mean, it was a distinct role. I got that. These guys haven't really, we haven't got the roles so decisive yet.
I like Xavier as the jobber because it protects the Kofi Big E tag team.
But, I mean, I understand your point. I do. I get that. I just felt, though, it was just too soft of a pin. I mean, he just laid down flat, where usually it's like you see a little bit of a struggle. I mean, he laid down like he was a dead man. When he got pinned, if you just look at what I'm talking about, I mean, he led like he was had rigor mortis set in when he laid down, as in it was like was he like he played dead almost.
You know, because
Titus is awesome, man. He killed
him. Yeah, I know. I wonder though, do you think Vince hates black wrestlers more, or the tag titles more? because he was able to put them all together at once. I thought that was fantastic.
You know, you talk about the roles. I'm going to no-sell that joke. But, you know, talk about the roles of the New Day as far as Freebirds. I think Big E is like Terry Gordy and Michael Hayes combined into one. Kofi is Jimmy Garvin, and Xavier is Buddy Roberts. Because there's no way Kofi is Michael Hayes in any type of deal. Big E being both of them.
You can be Jimmy Garvin. Scott, what did you think of the match?
I was happy for Primetime Players. I think they've been when they were first incarnation, half heel, half faces. I thought they worked hard and I thought they were due for a title win. I like New Day. I think the way the tone of the show was going, I think we needed kind of a happy moment. So I think that's why this match was booked the way it was, because it was very heel heavy tonight. But I thought the match was good. I like Titus, hot tag. Is that what you call him? Hot tag Titus.
Hot tag Titus. Yeah.
Hot tag Titus. I like him a lot. He's, you know, I agree. I love Big E. I think he's fantastic. Kudos all around to all these guys. I was cool with them winning the straps, and I think they did it because, again, it was very, very heel heavy tonight. So I think they wanted at least one happy ending show, you know, one match with a happy ending. So I was cool with it. I enjoyed it.
Dylan.
I think Scott is dead right as to why there was a title switch, in the sense that it was a very heel-heavy show, and it was kind of a weird show with a lot of weird finishes, too, and this match had a legitimate clean finish. Having said that, and I'm a huge Primetime Players guy, I mean, from the very beginning, and Titus, I've been probably one of the two or three bigger Titus O'Neil boosters on the planet. To me, he's one of the most underrated wrestlers the last 5, 6, 7 years. At least in theory, I'm happy for them, but to me, New Day is an act that had a lot of legs. I think this also sort of reeks of like them pressing the panic button because Tyson Kidd's hurt, and I don't really think they know what to do with the division, because I think they've got two teams that, in both the Usos and Cesaro and Kidd, that are out of commission right now, that are two of the better teams there. And it's like, okay, we've got to get a way to get Harper and Rowan the belts, so we're going to take them off the New Day and transfer.
That's
that
a good
way.
Call.
And I think, you know, my initial thought was that we were going to see the belt switch back to New Day, sort of in the fashion that you talked about, Will, with Kofi coming in. But I really think this is building to Harper and Rowan taking the belts off a babyface team. I think that's probably
some Harper Rowan, so I'm okay with that, too.
And I think that's probably where this is going at the end of the day. And I love Harper and Rowan, too. But, this was it was perfectly fine. It wasn't bad. You know, it was a solid little match. The finish was just kind of odd, because I don't think Primetime Players are not over enough at this point, because they haven't been presented well on the main shows for hardly at all. So it didn't get the reaction that I think would have gotten, especially if they had built the match more. And the reality is there was no reason why this match couldn't have gone 5 minutes longer, because what followed what followed went way too long, because, you know, well, me and Scott will argue about the Triple H tribute match in a few minutes, but this was, you know, it was just an odd way to book the match, because it did have all the traditional Southern tag tropes. The good guys won for a reason that I agree with Scott was pretty logical based on how the show was laid out, but it felt like it was too soon for them to win the belts, and it was too soon in the match for them to win. So it was kind of the double whammy of underwhelming.
I don't know, man. You know, I know I was arguing with Pete about this. I kind of like the idea of Titus coming in, Big E's indisposed outside, and he murders the jobber Xavier. So I have no problem with how quick Titus disposed of Xavier.
Yeah, but Titus is actually a jobber in real world, in the way he's been booked the last like 2 years.
Yeah, but he's the Big E of the team. So I have no problem with him cleaning the house. He gets hot tag, cleans up.
So he's the tougher of the jobbers.
He is, compared to Darren Young, absolutely.
King of the jobbers.
And he's the Jose Luis Rivera of the Primetime Players.
And what was funny about Darren Young was I saw somebody on Twitter say this, that they thought that, oh, it's nice for them to push Darren Young because he's gay. I'm like, they have never mentioned that on television, ever. You know? Or should they? I know. It's hilarious.
All right, let's move on. Main event time. Pete, Dean Ambrose versus Seth Rollins in the ladder match.
There's a lot of this I liked. A lot of it I didn't like. I thought it went way too long. I liked though, the slow build in a way where it felt almost sort of like Tracy Smothers, Chris Candido working a ladder match, where they're actually working a match and then they're building to using the ladder as a weapon and then building to a finish, except they went twice as long as a normal Smothers Candido match. So then it became like just overkill. But I loved the actual Ambrose getting his leg worked over. I loved all that stuff. I loved Rollins going after it. I got a kick when they went through the table and all of a sudden see the Spanish announcer actually in the first row calling it on the Spanish channel. I thought that was cool. I thought they kind of blew the bionic elbow tribute because I don't think anyone saw what he was really doing up there on the ladder. I rather would have, and obviously they were trying to keep, they weren't going to give him, normally I would love to see the Authority run into Ambrose and he could have done the bionic elbow horseman train, but we didn't get that. But, you know, I also, I think they almost made Rollins a little too strong, but I liked how Ambrose looked here. This to me, he was booked differently in the last month than he had been. Like the Ambrose that Johnny likes is a completely different character than the Ambrose that has been booked this last month. This guy has a lot of fight and he's fighting from underneath. He never gives up. He tries and tries and tries and just has bad luck. Overall, though, the match just went way too long for me.
Scott?
I don't know if you guys actually looked. I was stunned when I saw the length. I just checked Wikipedia. 35 minutes and 40 seconds.
Oh, it felt like it at the end.
It felt every bit that long.
It felt more.
I was thinking 45. Yeah, I thought it was 45.
No, incidentally, how long do you... I want to go around the horn a bit. Anybody want to take a guess as how long Nikki and Paige went?
11 minutes.
Eight. Yeah, 11:18.
Yeah.
Pretty long. Anyway,
yeah, no, it felt it was a good match. So, Scott, what about the match, bud?
There were a couple people on Facebook that said, God, this felt like the, and probably because Justin and I just did this a few vaults ago, that this match felt like Triple H and Shawn at Bad Blood 2004.
It was.
Straight down the jeans.
Yeah, this match definitely could have been about 10 minutes shorter. After a while, it was like, all right, well, somebody climb the goddamn ladder and take the freaking belt and end this thing. It was getting a little much at the end. I thought Rollins winning was fine. I think Ambrose kind of rehabilitated himself after the debacle of the end of 2014. And Triple H coming out at the end, I mean, you know, it's an Authority fortifier. There's nothing wrong with that. I think it was a dupe, and I said it to my friends that were here, when What's-Her-Face came out to do that, you know, cheesy little interview, I think everyone was expecting either one of two people's musics to hit, either Sheamus or Proc, just to screw with people. That's why I think they threw that interview in there, and sure enough, nothing happened. There were a lot of times where, I mean, these guys hit the crap out of each other. They went all out, and it was nice to see Rollins. Even more than Ambrose, it was nice to see Rollins in a match that had no, you know, Mercury and Noble and all that crap. I think this match was needed for Rollins in that aspect.
I agree.
And I thought it told a great story. It just told too long a story. It could have been a nice 10 chapter book instead of a 26 chapter book. I think Ambrose is fine. I could see him feuding with Sheamus to try and get the briefcase back. That might be a battleground match. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was a great main event. Just a little too long. But the crowd seemed to be into it, so I liked it.
Now on the finish, what do you think maybe that they did the, the interception of the bell type of thing? Do you think maybe did that to hopefully try to keep Ambrose a little stronger? Maybe they're building to a three-way with those guys in a three-way match?
I wasn't nuts about the end, like the whole. I'm pretty sure that's how I asked the guys, and they didn't remember. I'm trying to remember if that's how Shawn and Jericho ended at No Mercy 08. It's kind of a similar thing. I remember them both being on the ladder. I don't know if that's the case, but
No. Jericho hit him with the belt or whatever. It wasn't knocked him down, I think.
Okay, but I know that they both were. Oh, you know what? They both pulled it off, and they were tug of warring with it. That's what it was.
Yeah.
But yeah, same thing. I think that's a good point. I think that was meant for Ambrose to, you know, he lost by two fingernails, you know. You could see a three-way at Battleground. I wonder if Sheamus comes out tomorrow night and just says, you know what, I'll do it in a month. Who knows?
Oh, there's no way. He's a heel. He's going to steal it if he does it all. But to me, the most bothersome thing about the ending was, okay, so Ambrose survives the two power bombs into the railing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then they bury him under all that garbage, the ladder and the chairs. If you're going to have Ambrose win, just let him win then, or don't do that whole power bomb ending. You know, to me, that was kind of my thing that bothered me the most is you do this power bomb overkill. I mean, to me, it's like they killed off power bombs onto ladders and chairs as a finisher, you know, because mm-hmm. the guy just leaped up like 30 seconds later. Like,
well, my problem with it is I agree with Scott that Rollins needed to look strong. Cause if he's going to be working Brock, which I think all signs point in that direction. And if he's going to be working Brock, you know, Brock's been presented as a guy that Jesus Christ couldn't beat in a match. So you can't have Seth Rollins, who's basically been booked as Miz 2.0, flukes and banana peels his way to wins and has a posse of guys that intervene in every match. He needed to look strong, which he did look strong when he snapped and went crazy and did all that shit at the finish. Now you still got this finish. And so what bothered me about the finish was it sort of undermined what they were trying to do with Rollins. And then on top of it, it was the second straight pay-per-view where these guys basically had an inconclusive finish because, while you can argue, well, you know, Rollins is the one that walked away with the belt.
Dylan, you're breaking up, buddy. I don't know why, but can you repeat that last? Now you sound perfect. But before,
no clue. I've done nothing different. That's the joys of Skype, I guess, because I've literally moved not a single inch have I moved.
Is it just my end, or is it?
It's everybody. It's just the way the Wi-Fi stuff goes with these things, man.
I'm just curious because the other day it was just on my end. Remember, Chris?
Biggs was killing us Thursday night on the show we did. You know, with his Wi-Fi.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, anyway,
you sound better now.
Yeah,
you sound better now. Just continue. I'm not going to cut this out or anything. Just
my point was that I thought it undermined the idea of booking Rollins strong to do all that stuff and then have a photo finish. And I think on top of the fact that it undermined that, it doesn't make any sense to do two consecutive inconclusive finishes because that's basically what we got. You can argue all you want about, well, Rollins is the one who came away with it, you know, so he wins. But it's basically the exact same shit as the last month where you have kind of a non-finish to the match. You know, one guy, they both took the belt at the same time and then they fell. Last month, Ambrose got the win, but there was a bullshit dusty finish. And, you know, so we still don't have a conclusive finish to this feud. You know, and the match itself, look, that was a Triple H tribute match if there ever was. Like, before the match, you've got Triple H hyping him up so he'll evolve like a Pokemon and go full into full game evolution era Triple H mode. And then you get the 7.5 hour long match that is theoretically a good match in the sense that there was smart legwork and there was a decent build and everything, but it is so needlessly long and the pacing is really just really poor. I think it made the way it was paced. It also hurt that it came after Owens and Cena. And I want to make that point. I said I'd come around to that, so I'm going to come around to that here. I think you can get away with that match, not at that length, but you can get away with that match if you don't have Owens and Cena having your PWG classic earlier in the show. But when you have those guys have that kind of match and then follow it up later in the show with your sort of cerebral assassin tribute gimmick match, it doesn't matter how good the work is. It's not going to get over to that level. And that by the end of the match, I think they'd gotten the crowd, but there was big chunks of that match where they did not have the crowd at all. I mean, usually when you have a crowd brawling spot, the crowd goes nuts. And I don't want to say that they didn't care because that would be an exaggeration, but they were getting about as much of a reaction as Paige and Nikki Bella were getting during that segment. You know, like it just felt really flat, especially when you consider how over Ambrose has been on a lot of these shows. It just did not feel, and I think part of that was the finish from the previous month's show, and part of that was
having to follow that, you know, the Owen Cena match. And part of it is that ladder matches are just overdone. It was kind of like a deadly combination of things. So as a match, I thought it was, I can't say that I thought it was bad, because that would be an exaggeration, but the finish was really, I thought, not a smart finish for either guy. And it went so long, just dreadfully boring to me. The match was unnecessary.
And isn't that a criticism of a lot of those PWG matches, that they just go 10 minutes too long, that they need to wrap it up? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Zellner.
I got a question real quick about the finishes. With the current model, that with the network, do you feel that they're like going into like an old school Madison Square Garden, where they're going, where they're building the challenger up for three shows, and they're coming up with just fuck up finishes, and then they finally get a blow off?
I don't know that there's anybody that pays attention to the history of the WWE.com website that works for them now. So I don't know that there's anybody who watches enough old wrestling, you know, outside of people like your Michael Hayes and people like that are involved in that process, that they would even be thinking along those lines, at least not on the historical level. So, but I do think it, what I will say is, I think the network and the network model makes it much easier for them to say, we don't have to deliver a finish on these shows that you like. You know, with the old model, there was, I think, you couldn't dick people around for too long, or you'd be paying a price.
Yeah, you'd lose money in the long run. Yeah.
And now I don't. And the funny thing is, and we've talked about this before, you know, here on Place to Be Nation shows, both on reaction shows and on the saving the WWE shows that Will did with myself and other people, we've talked about how maybe they should be doing some screw job finishes more here and there, given the way things are. But at the same time, a lot of it is in the presentation, and I think it hurts when you don't have stars established. You know, you can do screw jobs and do bullshit finishes here and there when the stars are already established. But when you have a roster full of guys that are halfway there instead of all the way there, because your booking has been so bad for so long, that's when it becomes a major issue. And that's why,
yeah, like you know, let me interrupt real quick.
It's a problem for a guy like Ambrose.
Yeah, like Ambrose, before this last month, he was booked almost like a comedy figure. And then all of a sudden, he's in the main event. Now they try to toughen him up, and it's like almost too late.
He's still a comedy figure. Look at all that bullshit they did on Raw. With, you know, going through the, you know, New Orleans with the belt and with a pink saxophone and buying a ticket with the popcorn.
Right. I mean, I'm not saying
And that's leading to my whole deal with the booking, which, now that's my whole focus on this whole situation here. Before this match, you know, Seth Rollins is back there. He's, all of his friends are not with him right now. And Triple H, he needs to go out there and prove himself. He needs to show him that he could do it himself. And Triple H is giving him a pep talk. This guy's supposed to be the heel. But that's total babyface psychology. This guy's got to prove himself to everybody. And then you got Dean Ambrose, who stole the belt, who's been parading around, you know, acting like a fool, playing basically a heel character. So your psychology is totally crisscrossed to begin with. Then when you get into the match, you know, there definitely wasn't a spark there, because, I mean, there's nothing that they've done to make you care about these two guys feud for each other. Everything's been, you know, silly angle after silly angle. You know, Kane and J&J Security. I mean, Seth Rollins just lost to Joey Mercury on Raw. So, I mean, who's going to take Seth Rollins seriously? And then they went out there and they had a pretty good match. Long as fuck, as everybody said. Yeah, totally. But, you know, it was pretty good for what they did. But the finish, and I thought they were going to do some type of screw job finish where both of them were going to come down with a belt and, you know, they're going to have the title held up and do whatever bullshit they're going to do after that. But Rollins won, and he won without any help, but it still came off as a fluke because Ambrose, when he hit the mat, he lost control of the belt and Rollins was able to hold on to it. So even then, it still wasn't definitive. And that's the thing they need. If they want to get Rollins over as a strong champion, he has to have definitive victories. And then that promo after, you know, with JoJo, it's definitely building towards something with Brock Lesnar. And, you know, with Rollins claiming that he's the greatest of all time. But that also I think could also build in something with Triple H, who was standing right beside him when he just said that. And that's the plan for the future, is the Rollins-Triple H breakup and feud. So, you know, and Lesnar's supposed to work Battleground next month. So, you know, I guess Rollins and Lesnar is going to be the main event for Battleground, unless they throw Ambrose in there, which I think would kind of cheapen the match. But, yeah, I mean,
So Lesnar's working next month's show?
He is on the books for Battleground, yes.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yes.
Huh. All right. So, all right, let's wrap this up then. Zellner, thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle.
I'm going to go thumbs up for Cena, Owens, and there was some other, there was a lot of other good stuff on this show. Some of the booking, of course, was questionable, like we talked about, but there wasn't nothing actively bad like the last show that made me, you know, have the negative rating. So yeah, I'm going thumbs up.
Pete,
I give it a thumbs up. The Owens Cena match is I felt like it was a match of the year contender. No, there was nothing bad on the whole entire show. I mean, besides some of the booking.
Scott?
Oh, it was absolutely enjoyable. I think people were kind of freaking out on Facebook and stuff about the show being crappy and everything. It was definitely not. Owens Cena was great. I thought the ladder match was entertaining enough. Nothing really annoyed me except the Miz ending of the IC match. Otherwise, I was entertained. I enjoyed it.
And Dylan?
It was a very easy show to watch in the sense that even the, you know, 4.5 year long main event was not, there was enough good spots and like impact moments in it where it never completely made me want to blow my brains out. So I'm going to go slightly thumbs up, not a show of the year contender, not even something that I would feel confident calling a really good show, but it was a easy 3 hours to pass by, and the Dusty tribute to me kind of puts it over the top, it into the thumbs up category.
Yes,
I agree.
That is the most lukewarm thumbs up I've ever heard in my life. I thought it was an easy show, man.
It had a great match on it. There was nothing horrendous on it. Most of the undercard was at least decent, if not good. It had a Divas match that was good, but it did have some booking decisions that I thought were very odd. And that main event I can't reiterate this enough. You can't have a 35-minute match work that way in the main event on a show that had Owen Cena. It was just a bad decision to end the show on that note.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought the show was an easy thumbs up. Because I thought it started off well with the ladder match. Like I said, I thought the early ladder match was a refreshing change of pace. And all the undercard stuff was solid. Add in Owen Cena. Plus, I enjoyed the main event, too. I'm not going to lie. I liked the legwork in the main event like Pete did. And the only thing I didn't like was the finish. I thought that they kind of went way too cute. That last 10 minutes was a little bit overkill for me. But besides that, man, nothing else that I actively disliked. And to be fair, I did not see Ryback Big Show. So I don't know. Well, cool. I mean, guys, so I'm guessing the next big show then is Battleground, or is it the July the 4th show?
July 4th show is like
the 4th show, Battleground. Show.
And we're all going to wake up, have our oatmeal. And then
I got to work that day, so...
We'll sub somebody in for you. We'll get a Canadian on here or something.
What day of the week is July 4th?
Saturday,
right?
Saturday morning is the show.
You know what? I might be able to do that.
It's going
to
be Saturday morning?
Yeah, it's Saturday morning.
It's in Japan, broski, so it's like Japan time.
No, but
I know. I heard from inside sources.
But what I'm saying is, it Friday night bleeding into Saturday morning? Or
no, it's Saturday morning.
Yeah, it'll be like 3 a.m. Saturday morning.
Well, I don't think it's that early. So I think it's more like 5.
Okay, five.
That's Friday. That's like Friday night and then Saturday.
Yeah, it's like 5 a.m. So you got to be making donuts at 6 in the morning. You'd have to
wake up. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'll watch it at like 8 in the morning or 9 in the morning and we can do a reaction show at noon or 1 or something. I don't know. That's going to be rough. And then when is Battleground?
19. 5 weeks. So we got a long time. And like I said, 5 weeks of Bray Wyatt promos coming for the prepared Roman Reigns match. So be ready for that. The next NXT special is technically the one on the 4th, I guess. I don't know if they're going to do it like NXT proper, But I think the next NXT special will probably be in September.
Oh, so it's not anytime soon?
No.
No.
Okay. All right. So, Pete, what's going on with the Titans?
We just recorded we watched the Texas Death Match of Morocco and Backlund. Ugh. And yes. we watched the hour draw of the Backlund and Morocco.
It's Will's favorite show.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I gotta see that.
Oh, you don't?
Yeah. Yes, I do.
I can tell you. I was surprised on some of the people's opinions on both matches. So,
no, I'm sure Parv loved it. I'm sure Johnny Sorrow thought it was the best thing ever. Scott, what's going on the main event, brother, and the place to be?
Well, there'll be a new episode. There should be a new episode of the Kevin Kelly Show this week, and there will be a new episode of Main Event this week. We're going to have a full boat. Jordan Duncan actually was at the show tonight, so he'll be joining us. Well, he always joins us anyway, but he'll be on to do his live notes, feelings of the show, and you know, some dusty stuff. The Dr. G, my co-host on the Extra Point, grew up. He was a guy who was here tonight that grew up in Florida. His first match ever was 1982, a Flair, Dusty in a cage for the NWA title. So he's got, sweet. And he's met Dusty, and he's got a signed picture of him. So a lot of dusty talk Tuesday night. And a little later in the week, and then you know some Money in the Bank recap, and you know other stuff. So that'll
be I really like the Kevin Kelly one. They did the breakdown on the Destination America one recently.
So new Kevin Kelly this week, new main event this week.
And Dylan, anything coming up for wrestling culture or the trademarks?
We will probably have a trademark show within the next 10 days, if I had to guess, going by what our schedule's been lately. Wrestling culture, we're actually going to try to record a show this week. I'm actually in Chattanooga live from the Hales family compound as we do this show. And, I think I'm going to try and do a wrestling culture show with Dave this week and finally knock that sheep herder show out that we keep talking about that gets messed up as Dave flees Canada for the warm embrace of Castro down there in Cuba for a week or whatever. But, I've got that going on. And also while I'm at it with the cheap plugs, you can always follow me, on Twitter at Dylan Waco. And I did an interview with Scott Hensley, who's the promoter for the Scenic City Invitational, which is looking to me to be a really, really cool independent wrestling tournament here in the Chattanooga area coming up the weekend of August 7th and 8th. It's going to kind of be done on – I don't want to compare it to the Battle of Los Angeles, PWG, because I think that will give people the wrong idea about sort of the style of wrestling. But it's going to be a cool mixture of sort of local Southern indie talent that I'm really high on and some bigger names and talent from other places, like Moose from Ring of Honor is on the shows. Congo Kong, who's one of my favorite indie guys, is on the shows. But also a lot of the good Southern guys I'm a big fan of from this area, like KT Hamill, Chip Day, people like that. So I've got an interview with that promoter that's up at voiceswrestling.com that people can check out as well.
Nice. Zellner, you and I just did Exile on Dusty. 3.5 hours. People got to check that out. What do you plan on the next Exile show being?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, I have nothing really in the hole right now. I'm taking this week off. I was supposed to take last week off, but Dusty, you know, that tragedy, unfortunately, prompted this show. But, yeah, I got some irons in the fire I'm going to work on. But go listen to the past shows if you haven't listened to them yet on Place to Be Nation.
Yeah, you guys are awesome on the Dusty, man. Major thumbs up from both of you guys.
Yeah, I've got a lot of great feedback from everybody. I can't express my appreciation enough to everyone for listening. And we're going to try to put more out there. You know, everybody is going to be on, trying to get some different guests on that you don't normally hear on the Place to Be Nation Network.
Ah, fuck that. So, here's the deal. You have me and Dylan right here. So I'm just going to tell the people right now, me and Dylan, we're going to be on a future Exile. We're going to talk about the history of SMW, a true in-depth 17-hour history of SMW. And I'll only talk for about 32 minutes of that whole show.
That is coming soon. That will.
So we're going to do that. And then, for those listening to Place to Be Nation, if you had a chance, listen to the Dangerous Alliance podcast with me and Scott's running buddy, JR. we're actually going to do a show with Chris where we do a rundown of the Dangerous Alliance era in WCW.
Awesome.
So, you know,
that'd be cool. My favorite era probably ever.
Yeah, so we're going to talk matches, talk angles. Chris is going to give us the lowdown on the behind-the-scenes stuff in WCW at that time. So that's going to come up, I don't know, this summer sometime for sure. So,
and, Will, you know, we talked about, you know, you talked about the 3.5-hour show we did on Dusty the other night. Just imagine how long the show would have been if I hadn't done over five hours of 1988 Crockett Promotion.
Oh, man. I know. Yeah, for those who haven't listened to Dusty Tribute, full disclosure, spoilers, we don't even talk about 1987 and 88 because Chris, Bix, and Dylan already covered it in a 17-hour special. So,
and those are awesome as well, listeners, if you haven't checked them out.
Yeah, so hey, tons of great things going on here at Place to Be Nation. All of the shows that I've been a part of have gotten some really good feedback. I've been reading the feedback on Exile and Titans, and it's just been awesome. And you know, Scott, you know, I'm always a fan of Main Event and Place to Be stuff. So,
thank you.
And obviously, okay, I guess I'm a fan of Dylan shit too. It's not like I haven't been on his show before.
We're all incestual here, so
yeah, having given his Canadian buddy there some hard times.
And let me tell you something. I'm gonna throw this in here too, real quick. If you want to hear to people who think that I'm just an asshole, if you want to hear people,
oh, you are,
argue amicably with very little cheap shots in a long form subject, in a controversial subject, me and Scott and Will did an awesome show on Triple H. It's really old. But man, it was a fun show. It's one of my favorite podcasts
It was the most polite argument on Triple H I've ever heard in my life. Pretty soon it was
because I won.
No. After a while,
it's good for business. That's why.
It was more polite than our Shield versus Freebirds debate. Anything could be more polite than that.
The next one, Will, is you and I and the Magnificent Morocco. That's why. That's where.
Oh, you're gonna lose on that one.
No way, man. No way.
Hey, put it this way: when me and JT watched the Saturday night's main event where him and DiBiase faced off in '88, he did the world's worst Russian leg sweep in that match, like horrendous.
Well, 1988.
And I don't give a shit. And he nearly crippled DiBiase on the world's worst power slam.
1988 Don Morocco is basically a statue in the ring.
So. Yeah. Well, come on. We know the game you're playing here. Come on. 1981 Morocco. Very different.
It was garbage.
We're going, you and I, in the ring. We're doing it.
Yeah. You guys can rewatch that hour draw from Philly. That'd be awesome. You guys can discuss that one.
I want it.
You can have it, Scott. It's all yours. I'll send it. Actually, Scott, I do have that available. Is it online? Because if it's not online, I'll send it to you.
It used to be online.
Anyway, guys, we got to wrap this up. I want to have this reaction show up for the Place to Be Nation tomorrow morning. So I'm going to work on this. And for everybody listening, good night.